This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Consider this scenario. A woman is punched by her husband. She fears for her safety and goes to court to get a protective order. Are the chances she'll get an order at all affected by where she lives in Maryland? Courtwatch Montgomery, which monitors protective order cases in that county, has analyzed data from all across Maryland for 2013 and found it shows significant variation in the rates at which protective orders are granted, denied, or dismissed in different counties. We wanted to understand why. With me to talk about it is Laurie Duker, Executive Director of Courtwatch Montgomery. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us by phone is the District Court of Maryland's Chief Judge, John Morrissey. District courts handle many of the protective orders in the state. Welcome back to the show, Judge Morrissey.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, Laurie Duker, first, what does a protective order do?
Well, a protective order is the key legal protection that victims can obtain that make the difference, can often be life or death. A protective order can order that an offender leave the home, not to have any contact with the victim, not to go to their house, school. It offers a whole menu of protections that a victim can choose from to do whatever is necessary to keep her safe.
And how does someone get a protective order?
A victim can go during the day to any courthouse in Maryland and obtain a protective order. Or 24 hours a day, each county has places that they can go to a commissioner's office to get that protection.
And that first step is a temporary order.
That's right. And the temporary order is good for 7 days. And as quickly as possible, law enforcement takes that order from the court and serves it on the offender. And that has to happen before the court can make a decision about a final order that can be good for 1 year.
Sheila, to be perfectly 100% correct on that, if they go to a commissioner first, it would be an interim order that would be seen by a judge within 48 hours of the commissioner hearing the case.
Well, Chief Judge Morrissey, we're talking about the rate at which protective orders are granted, denied, or dismissed in different counties across the state. And I obviously understand what it means for an order to be granted, but what's the difference between it being denied or dismissed?
A denial would mean that a hearing had occurred on that case. A dismissal would be that either someone didn't show up or they came to court and they requested the court not to go forward with the case.
Well, in the city of Baltimore, 53% of the cases were dismissed in 2013. In Talbot County, the rate was half that, 23% of cases were dismissed. Why do you think there could be that kind of variation?
There's many reasons. It may be transportation related. It may be that people were upset at a particular time and they've changed their mind. It's very difficult to discern. We set the times. We try to set them within the schedule of the court. We try to give consideration to the individuals. All of our judges are trained thoroughly in domestic violence. We have multiple levels of training, and we all use the same standards statewide.
Laurie Duker, from your observation, are more cases dismissed because the complainant decides not to move forward or because the respondent can't be found?
Why cases are dismissed is the million-dollar question. And it's very disturbing that we've got over 7,000 women men, victims of domestic violence, coming to court in a year, filing, and then their cases ultimately being dismissed. That's a critical question. One problem we know that happens is a problem of service from law enforcement. In Baltimore, for instance, a very small number of the orders in the past were quickly served on offenders. And that could mean that a victim has to come to court 2, 3, 4 different times before the judge is legally able to go ahead and rule on a final order. So you can imagine that a victim may show up 2 or 3 times in court, but the order may ultimately be dismissed because the employer won't let her out of work again, she's run out of free daycare, she doesn't have money for the parking meters. So whether those orders are served in a timely way is critical. Now, the process has changed for service in Baltimore, so I hope these figures will show that next year and there'll be fewer dismissals.
I can tell you that prior to this last year, that the police rather than the sheriffs were serving process, and at times it would be into the 30 percentile, but now the sheriff's office has come up to full speed in the last year, and we're up in the mid to high 70s in terms of service. there are other safeguards to keep the individual from having to come back if there's not service. They can request, and a lot of times the judges will offer that the individual can sign up for the VINE, the victim notification system that we have, and then all they'll have to do is call in the night before. We'll notify them if there's been service, but they'd have to call in the night before to see whether there's been service or not, and if there's not, and they've signed up for this VINE and requested this, then the case will automatically be continued until we do get service, so they won't have to come to court. We're very sensitive to that issue.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with the Chief Judge of Maryland's District Court, John Morrissey, and Laurie Duker, Executive Director of Court Watch Montgomery, which monitors protective order hearings in that county. We're talking about the rate at which protective orders are granted, denied, and dismissed in different areas of Maryland. Let's move on beyond the cases dismissed. Even if we pull out the dismissals as if those cases were never filed, we see a big disparity in what happened in different courts when a case actually got to a judge in 2013. In Somerset County, 96% of protective orders were granted. In Queen Anne's County, only 59%. Baltimore City was right about it. The state average, its judges granted 73% of the protective orders that reached them. Chief Judge Morrissey, why the variation?
I have, if you recall, Sheila, we talked about the appointed attorney program several months ago, and the statistics are very difficult to compare from county to county and year to year. The same applies with domestic violence. In the criminal scenario, an assault could be something like someone spitting at each other, and that would be dealt with, obviously, on a very minor scale, whereas an assault could be someone attempting to run someone over with a car, which can be an extremely serious matter. In domestic violence, you just don't know what the reason is that the person's bringing the case in. Sometimes they are domestic violence. Sometimes they want a divorce when they come to court, and that's not the appropriate forum. We're an emergency-based, you know, type of system for the protective orders and peace orders that we do.
But do you think there is likely that variations in the actual seriousness of the complaint is what underlies this variation that we see in the percent of orders granted?
That's certainly part of it. The other part is, and I don't mean to criticize the statistics, but for example, in Somerset County, they only did 100 protective order cases, that 100 were filed in the district court in 2013. Only 64 actually had hearings, and of those, 45 were granted. Those are the numbers I have in the district court. I know that Lori's numbers include the circuit court, too, but you have to remember I'm the chief of the district court.
Okay.
That's a very small pool when you consider Baltimore City that had 4,442 cases filed during the same period. So I think some of it is a little bit on the statistical side of it. And it may be how populations deal with each other. It may be what the police are telling them. It may be what whether they have advocates there in the courtroom with them, like the House of Ruth. I'd love to have every person, whether a respondent or a petitioner, have an attorney in the courtroom.
But how do you make sure that judges are making similar rulings in similar cases across the state?
Well, every judge, when they first come on, goes to what's called a new trial judge orientation. They're trained on domestic violence there. Before they're allowed to sit, they sit with a more experienced judge. We sit two judges, and that usually is 6 weeks worth of training while they're sitting and do domestic violence dockets with a more senior judge. Our judicial institute, our college, if you would, throughout the course of the year, will offer DV workshops and training through that. We participate in things like the Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, the National Judicial Institute for DV. We have domestic violence coordinating councils. We have a lot of training elements that are involved to try to ensure that we're using best practices throughout the state. We view these as extremely serious. It's the most difficult court personally that I sit in when I'm a judge.
Laurie, do you think that judges are applying the state law the same way in different places?
Well, we can't really know that, can we? But I think there are a number of things in play. the judge mentions a couple very interesting things. I think legal representation may have a lot to do with it. In our county, only half of victims have lawyers.
In Montgomery.
Yes. And whether a victim has a lawyer or not, advocating for her makes a huge difference in terms of making sure her the incident's fully described and what she needs is fully described. If there aren't lawyers, victim advocates are key. And that would vary county to county. A victim advocate can do a lot to describe to the victim what's going to happen and explain legal terms and things that can really improve her case. I think there probably are large differences in how judges interpret the law in different places. And the initial education on domestic violence for judges is terrific. And as Judge Morrissey pointed out, there's some great continuing education opportunities. But we think those should be mandatory because the judges who need the most education on domestic violence are not necessarily the ones most likely to sign up for a course that's available. So we think some additional required education would be great and might improve the consistency of decisions.
One thing before we go. On October 1st, the standard of evidence needed to get a protective order was reduced. Judges now need a preponderance of evidence rather than the higher bar of clear and convincing evidence. Chief Judge Morrissey, I know it's been less than 4 months since the new standard went into effect, but can you tell whether it seems to be having any impact on the numbers of protective orders granted?
I do not have any hard evidence on that. We just haven't run the numbers on that yet. However, I do believe it'll go up, obviously. The standard, judges use standards. That's what we do. So if you say to me that the standard is now preponderance of the evidence rather than the old standard of clear and convincing evidence, it would be more likely that I would grant a protective order than before.
Well, I appreciate you both talking to us about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Sheila. A pleasure.
John Morrissey is the District Court of Maryland's Chief Judge. Laurie Duker is Executive Director of Court Watch Montgomery, which monitors protective order hearings in that county. We've got a link to her analysis of statewide data on protective orders and our own breakdown of some of that data at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Also there, more of this conversation about the factors that influence when a judge orders counseling and whether the gender of judges affects their approach to protective orders. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning, the art of the self-portrait. Stay with us on 88.1.